Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to Turkey Confidential. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the Splendid Table's annual cooking call-in special from American Public Media. We're supported by Knowable, with audio courses like Mark Bittman's How to Eat Now. Okay, so every year at this time, I spend my Thanksgiving not snug at home in New York with my family, but in a combination of airports, cabs, and radio studios in frigid downtown St. Paul, Minnesota, working. I take phone calls and last-minute Turkey Day cooking questions live with guests, and I wouldn't give it up for anything. Well, this year, like a lot of you, COVID is changing the way we're celebrating today. We realized we couldn't get into a studio with our whole team, but you know what? There was no way we'd miss making the show all the same. So today, what you'll hear are the guests we would have invited to join us, taking calls you pre-recorded and sent to us. So thank you for all of your voice memos, calls, and questions, and please, we want to see what's going on in your kitchens and dining rooms today. Tag us on Instagram at Splendid Table, or use the hashtag Turkey Confidential or hashtag My Splendid Table. And even if today is going to be a little different than normal, we hope that you're still celebrating in your heart, around your table, and have time to reflect on what you're thankful for. A little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Mike Solomonov, chef of Zahab in Philadelphia, and we'll start with the one and only Samin Nosrat. She's the author and star of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, a cooking columnist at the New York Times Magazine, and is the host of her own cooking questions podcast called Home Cooking. And luckily for us, she still finds time to keep coming back on this show. Hey, Samin, happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, Francis. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so happy to talk with you. It always makes me so happy to get to talk with you.
I feel so lucky. Third year running. This is so fun.
It's incredible, right? How the time flies.
I know. Can't believe it.
So like all of my pre-scripted Thanksgiving questions are all like out the window because I've asked you them all the time because we've talked about so many Thanksgiving. But if I'm remembering correctly, your Thanksgiving last year was with friends at a house, like maybe in a desert, and you did not do turkey, right? And you fried like a whole flock of chickens.
Oh yeah, you're okay. You're close. You're conflating some things. So for the past 2 years, I've gone to the same house in Point Reyes, which is sort of on the coast.
Okay.
And 2 years ago, I fried chicken, and last year we did do turkey, and we made some mole out of the legs, and then we roasted the breast. So we had a little bit of tradition.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
How'd the mole turn out?
Oh, it was so delicious. I highly recommend people making, because we turned it into tamales. And it was this really fun project where I like to bring groups of people together and use the potential of manual labor.
Everyone thinks it's a fun time to get together.
And I'm totally.
Just thinking, you're folding all my dumplings for me. It's great.
Exactly. And what I thought was really beautiful was that a lot of the people who had gathered were not people who are comfortable in the kitchen or don't really consider themselves cooks. And so I said, listen, like, I'm not going to force everyone to cook, but the rule is you have to make one tamale. If you want to eat dinner, you have to make one tamale. And so people came and they were like, I don't know, you know, and they were banana leaf tamales in the masa, and everybody did the one and they were like, this is so fun. And so and everybody ended up doing a bunch of them. And it was just really fun to see people loosen up and just get really into it. That was, as a teacher and as a person who loves encouraging people to cook, that was an incredibly joyful thing for me to witness.
Yeah, that's a real highlight. What's your plan this year?
Well, this year I'm going to go visit a different friend, and she's down in Southern California, and she lives on an avocado and citrus ranch.
Oh,
and her husband, he runs a salmon fishery in Alaska for 6 months of the year. They promised me if I came They would get me a white king salmon. Have you heard about those?
Yes. Their flesh is like, well, it's white. It's like ivory colored. And I think it's like some genetic mutation where they
It's a genetic like aberration. Yeah. And they have like super fatty. It's like they have fattier flesh. And, you know, I think I have tasted it way back when, but it's one of those things where when I heard about it a few years ago, I was like, I really want to have one. And every year he promises to bring me one and never does. So this year I was like, come on, please. And they were like, okay, if you come for Thanksgiving,
we'll give you my bribe. A giant, genetically aberrant fish.
Totally. But they also have pomegranate trees, so I'm sure we'll make something with pomegranate and persimmon. And, and her brother's family lives on the ranch, and there's just a bunch of kids running around. And so, to me, I have spent the last 9 months, you know, in a house by myself, mostly. And so, a lot of the joy of cooking for me is about gathering with people. Mm-hmm. And cooking for people, and I have not felt much of that joy or motivation or inspiration, and hence I have been eating a lot of broccoli and rice and beans for the last 9 months.
I mean, there's nothing better for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally good, but like it. I've been eating a lot of the same stuff, and so I look forward to being really excited to cook with and for people. So I'm pretty jazzed to have something to look forward to.
That's great.
I'm pretty sure there will be turkey too. Yeah. At one point she sent me a picture of like a ranch down the street where they were selling young turkeys, you know, and she was like, should we just buy our own turkey and raise it for Thanksgiving? And I was like, go for it. But then I think she calculated how much it would cost to buy the turkey and feed the turkey. And she was like, this is going to be the most expensive turkey in the world. So I don't think that's what we're going to do.
This is small farm economics, people.
Yeah, totally.
Go to your farmer's market. Pay whatever they charge you.
Yeah.
Worth it. All right, cool. So we, we got so many listeners who want to ask you about their Thanksgiving.
Oh, I can't wait. This is so fun. I'm so excited.
You were so pro at this now. I mean, you were always pro at it, but now you're like super extra pro at this. So let's go.
Well, now I've been practicing for the last however many months on our own. I have to say, definitely being on Turkey Confidential was a major inspiration for home cooking, for our podcast that I make with Rishi.
Come on.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think it's just been so fun, this like this model of interacting with people and helping give them advice. And so, and it brings me so much joy.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
To get to chat with them. And so, yeah, it was definitely a big, big source of inspiration for us. So thank you.
No, my God, it's so incredible to hear that, especially since I love your show. I love the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
So great.
It's so silly.
Okay, let's go to a city called Philadelphia. Anyone heard of it?
Oh, only the best city.
All right, let's go to Philly for our first question.
Hi, friends. Christina from Philly here. My two sisters, both are healthcare workers, and many of us are educators in the family. We are having a socially distanced, pre-portioned Thanksgiving meal 6 feet apart from each other outside in my parents' side yard in Philly in November. Yes.
Wow. That's a commitment.
2020.
Yeah. We only want 3 side dishes. We can only have 3 side dishes.
Right. Okay.
We're trying to keep it simple, but share delicious food together.
Oh, I love
it. Couple things about us. Italian-American family. Dad, first-generation Italian. Abruzzese and Friulan. Mm-hmm. And we love bold flavors. We love greens.
Ooh, yeah.
And we love eating together.
Sure.
So what should our 3 side dishes be?
Ooh.
Thanks.
This is so fun.
You get to choose all 3.
I feel so powerful right now. Don't you?
I get the feeling that her family is going to end up choosing whatever they want in the end.
Italians are not going to listen to me. Like, but thanks for giving me the illusion of power. Thank you. I appreciate it. It makes me feel really good right now. And I'll do my best to honor your Southern Italian upbringing. So, let me just double check. But I believe Abruzzo is, let me just,
it's in the middle of the boot.
Yeah, it's like Central Italian, I guess. Okay, so from what I understand of Abruzzese cooking, there's a lot of like, you know, it's on the coast. There's definitely a lot of fish involved. So I can imagine you would want some like strong anchovy flavor in something. Mm. Like, and since you said you want the greens, one of my favorite greens, something I've been obsessively eating right now is rapini. So I would love like a delicious bitter greens dish, whether it's with rapini or other, or you could go the chicory's route, like treviso, or if you can't get your hands on treviso, radicchio or Belgian endive cooked with some anchovies, maybe some chili flake. And if you even want to work a little bit of tomato in there, like a just canned tomato or tomato paste, and just make it this incredibly rich, like salty, umami kind of classic Italian flavors, long just cooked like greens.
Sweat it down.
Yeah. Maybe start it with some onions and garlic, and yeah, that would be really delicious. You could, if you're working with the chicories, you could also roast them. One of the things I always think about Thanksgiving, and certainly, I mean, you guys sound like you're really maybe going to divide and conquer, which maybe it will actually solve this problem. But one of the big constraints for Thanksgiving for people is the big constraint is oven space and time in the oven.
Yeah, totally.
Because so many dishes require time in the oven. So I was going to say you could maybe roast your greens, you know, especially if they were chicories, but why not cook them on the stove? Because that takes one thing out of the oven. So, yeah, I think caramelize some onions, cook some garlic down. Even at that point, you can work some anchovies, a little tomato paste in, and build this beautiful umami-rich, fragrant base. And then long cook some greens into there, whatever they are. But I really love bitter greens. And then you could finish it with some toasted breadcrumbs, some lemon zest, even a squeeze of lemon to brighten it up at the table. One of my main sort of Thanksgiving tenets is there's never enough acid on the table. And everything kind of gets really rich and overly bland.
Like starchy and buttery.
Yeah. So that, I think that definitely would satisfy that, like, you know, that like Italian side dish craving, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think you also need to have some classic Thanksgiving tastes. So I, for one, can't imagine not having stuffing or dressing. Stuffing. I guess people, I call it stuffing even though it's technically dressing. What about you, Francis?
I love stuffing. I call it stuffing. I respect people who call it dressing, but I truly for the life of me cannot understand why it's called dressing to some people. It's not like something you put on a salad. It's not, there's no like linguistic connection to dressing for me at all. Like stuffing, I understand why you call it stuffing because you stuff it in the bird.
Yeah, although, it just didn't happen to make it inside. I think one of the great things about stuffing is that unless you come from a family where like you've made it the same way, you know, for the last 60 years and it's not Thanksgiving.
And you have to keep making it that way. Yeah.
Unless you have to have it that way. I think when you are limiting what's on your table, I think for a lot of people, a little experimentation with stuffing this year is a great way to work many more Thanksgiving tastes into one dish. And so a lot of the things that might appear on other parts of the table or a lot of the hints of flavor that might appear on other parts of the table can make their way into the stuffing and still be part of the meal because stuffing is naturally a something that has so many different components. You know, I think you can work some greens in. I think you can I always put greens in there anyway. So you can definitely work all of those kinds of wintry herbs like sage and thyme that might appear elsewhere on the table. You can work in honestly, you could work cranberries in. Like, why not put some cranberries in there and get some delicious bursts of some acid? And if you don't feel comfortable, maybe you don't want to eat like a fresh cranberry, certainly you could put dried cranberries that you've rehydrated in apple cider or in white wine, you know, so that they're nice and juicy. Like that's a great way to get some cranberry taste. Although to me, I feel like cranberry sauce, again, is a source of acid. So you must have it. And I'm not even going to count that as one of your three sides. Like that's a condiment. You gotta have it.
It's your rules. You make the rules. Yeah, Collie's not actually here.
Yeah. I'm the boss here. Today, yeah. I'm not at your house. You can do what you want. My classic, you know, and by classic, I mean, I've been making it for the past like 5 years because that's as long as I've been making Thanksgiving. I like to make stuffing using sourdough bread. So I work in as many forms of acid as possible. So I start with a nice sourdough bread, some mm-hmm. greens that I've cooked, a little bit of onion and carrot and celery. And I do whatever dried fruit I have around that I've rehydrated with chicken stock or white wine. I love a punch of acid. So white wine, I like prunes in there. If prunes. I've got sausage, I'll work a little sausage in. If somebody really feels like they want nuts in there, I'll put nuts in there. But for me, the main key is making it really, really moist with delicious homemade stock, because there's this kind of magical chemical thing that happens. And I'm not a scientist, so I can't tell you what it is, but I'm sure you'll know what I'm talking about, Francis. But there's this magical thing that happens where when starch from bread interacts with the like collagen and gelatin from stock over time, and as it absorbs, there's this kind of like magical sort of like glossy, it's almost like a little crust forms, and the texture of the bread transforms as it absorbs the stock. And it has to be like really rich bony broth that it does it with. And it's this kind of, you know, it basically becomes French onion soup. Without the cheese.
This is a very elaborate way of saying you're making French onion soup.
Yeah, you're making French onion soup. And so why wouldn't you want to eat that? So, I feel like that stuffing is sort of non-negotiable, and you can adapt that with whatever kinds of things are the flavors of your family and of your region. And then I also feel like the third one, pretty much for most people, it's funny because I don't care for this that much, but I found that almost everybody else feels like you cannot have a turkey meal without mashed potatoes. Like you need to have the mashed potatoes and gravy. And so I would say you got to have mashed potatoes and gravy. And again, what I would do is work some acid into it, whether you do that via sour cream or buttermilk or creme fraiche that you use in addition to the butter that you add in with the potatoes as you're mashing them. So, you know, just like I'm always thinking of how do I make this tangy? How do I make this tangy? But I really respect your effort to create a pre-portioned meal and to really adhere to these guidelines and eat at a distance. You know, we're all doing it in our different ways. Like, yeah, I'm quarantining and then getting tested. And I know, you know, a lot of people are making sacrifices by staying apart or having meals over Zoom. So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's an important year to have these kinds of like individual sacrifices for the greater good. So,
yeah. And we're not just taking care of ourselves. You're taking care of the people you're going to see, right? You're
totally.
Taking care of the people you might stand next to, you know, in the supermarket
at the
line,
grocery
you know?
Store.
You're protecting your friends, your family, and your community.
Yeah.
All right. So
I hope that helps. And I kind of want to know now if you have some way of letting me know what you actually do, please let me know, because I suspect you won't do anything I say.
All right, let's go to another caller. Let's go to the other side of the country in LA, which is Charlotte.
Hello, Francis and Splendid Table friends. I live in Los Angeles, but I have a house out in Joshua Tree, and this year I'm having a very small Friendsgiving, mostly just my quarantine mates. The majority of us are vegetarian, so I had heard that you can take old food scraps, stash them in your freezer, and when the time is right, you can make a veggie broth from them. Not sure if that would be gross or what, but was hoping that you guys had a really good veggie broth from scratch recipe for us. Thanks so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, I love
that. I do too. And I got to say, like, I'm really excited to hear what you think of this, because I have gotten so lazy in my stock making. I know we just talked about having a great stock, you know, cooked down with a lot of bones for your stuffing and other reasons. But a vegetable stock, vegetable broth, I'm not so personally into like saving all your carrot peelings and your onion skins and stuff like that. Like I haven't found a way to make that delicious. But if I'm just making a straight up vegetable stock, I'll just put mirepoix, like onion, carrot, and celery, and simmer it in water. and call it done. And like, I know there are ways, you know, lots of elaborate recipes. I remember seeing one in Cooks Illustrated when I was like a young cook that had literally 20 ingredients, but they swore it was the best vegetable stock you've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I bet it is, but I just don't find that I need all that much, because all I want is just a little vegetal sweetness.
Yeah.
And then cook other things in it. Or like bean cooking liquid.
Oh,
I just love
liquid.
Saving. And
like, gold,
that's just
gold.
An amazing broth on its own. But I want to hear what you have to say about making like a killer vegetable broth.
It's funny. I, one of the Instagram accounts that I've really appreciated throughout the quarantine is Fanny Singers. She's Alice Waters' daughter.
Yeah.
She has been obsessive about her vegetable scraps. And see, she has some funny hashtag. I think she calls it like compost stock or whatever. And it's really funny because I had some questions in my mind, because she was literally doing what Charlotte said, which was saving whatever scraps there were and dumping them at the end of the week into a pot of water, covering it with water, bringing it to a boil for 40 minutes and turning it into liquid that then she would either drink or use to cook over the course of the week, mm-hmm. which in a lot of ways was in direct contrast to everything that I learned as a cook at Chez Panisse. So I was like, how's Alice Waters feeling about
approving.
This happening in her house? Like, and and also it's exactly the spirit of the time that we're in, you know, which is use everything up and like extract every drop of flavor from everything that's around. And so I do think there's a middle place where I agree with you. I feel like if it's not something that I would eat raw, I don't want to extract its flavor into my broth. So, you know, sometimes depending on the carrot, I will put it unpeeled into my broth, or I will cook with it unpeeled. But if it's really gnarly or old, or, you know, super, I don't know, something's just not very appetizing looking about it, I wouldn't put those peels into my broth. I don't always put like the toughest bits of vegetables. I don't mix every vegetable. I don't put the tops of carrots. You know, I try to be pickier because I don't love a kitchen sink broth. And especially for Thanksgiving, when we all have such like nostalgic associations. And why not like be a little bit more luxurious with what you're choosing to, you know, add a little bit of flavor.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I was recently looking at, I think it's in Nick Sharma's new book, The Flavor Equation. He has a recipe for a veggie stock, for like a super flavorful veggie stock. And it was pretty simple, you know, and in my mind I was like, oh, I think I would do these and even simplify it a little bit more. So it was basically what you said, just onion, carrot, and celery. And then mm-hmm. I think if you cut the vegetables a little bit smaller, they don't have to be super tiny, even just 1-inch pieces, then there's more sort of surface area touching the water.
Yeah, to extract the flavor.
Yeah, because the key with a veggie stock is you don't want to cook it for hours like a chicken stock, because you're not trying to extract any nutrients or, you know, you're not trying to break any bones down into their, you know, component parts. So there, it's really just about getting some flavor compounds out of the vegetables. So max, it's like a 45-minute simmer. So I would say do some of that. I actually like a little onion skin in the broth, because that helps make it, give it a little bit darker color.
Like a golden, yeah,
golden color. And then if you're not opposed to mushroom flavor, even just, I like button mushrooms, cremini mushrooms. You can roast, you can roast some cremini mushrooms and add those in. Or if you have some dried porcini mushrooms, you could powder those up and add them in, and that adds that little bit of umami that you might, you know, you're going to be missing because you don't have the chicken. Or if you are not opposed to adding a Parmesan rind, you could add a Parmesan rind in there.
Oh, it's
or,
so good.
Or you could add just even like a teaspoon of tomato paste. So those are all little things.
Yeah, just
I think.
Some umami sort.
Yeah,
or like
just
a shake
little.
Or two of soy sauce.
A shake or two of soy sauce. Or if you're like feeling real Joshua Tree, you could do Bragg's liquid aminos. That's what I ate a lot of that when I was down there. And, you know, and then of course all of the herbs. And
would MSG not fly down there?
I don't think I saw any jars
it's not
of
heavy
MSG.
Not
I feel
heavy
like
MSG
there was
MSG
just
country.
Bragg's liquid aminos in every Airbnb already. It's like, you know, legally required. And then, you know, I'm a big champion of the bay leaf. So I'd put a bay leaf in there, some parsley. And then because it's Thanksgiving time, I love sage and thyme in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all things I would just sort of bring it all to a boil and then let it simmer for 40 minutes or so until it smells really nice. And then just strain it. And then you have this nice, beautiful broth that's going to add a delicious flavor to anything that you're going to cook, you know, add it to or cook in it.
Cool. All right, let's go north of there.
I like this road trip we're on, like this geography lesson.
I just miss traveling so much.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep pretending. To your neck of the woods, to Oakland, California.
Oh, my neighbor.
My name is Deanna, and I live in a semi-off-grid renovated shed in Oakland, California.
She might live across the street from me.
Because of COVID, I'll be making Thanksgiving dinner by myself this year. As an introvert, I'm actually pretty excited about flying solo, but my only means of cooking are a two-burner propane stove and a tiny toaster oven.
Ooh.
I would love to roast a small piece of turkey, but I'm skeptical about the toaster oven's ability to hold a hot enough temp. I have successfully baked boneless, skinless chicken breast in it, but I'm feeling unsure about this whole turkey thing. Do you think I should go for it? And if not, do you have any ideas for a stovetop option?
So, so I guess the jury's still out as to whether or not this person actually is your neighbor.
Yeah.
But actually, listen to her. I was thinking about you. You know, I know you live in this really close knit neighborhood, and you're often cooking for your neighbors. And I know you just said, like, you know, you're not so jazzed about cooking for yourself, but she's psyched to cook for herself for Thanksgiving. Like, do you ever feel like that vibe?
Oh, I mean, there's times I definitely feel that. I have to say, I've just felt that feeling a lot more rarely. But recently, I was at the grocery store and I was walking by down the butcher counter and I needed to get chicken legs for a recipe I needed to test. And I just like passed mm-hmm. by this beautiful rack of spare ribs that was just glistening mm-hmm. and calling my name. And it's one of those things where like I would never buy a rack of spare ribs. I live by myself, you know, like, and yeah. somehow I was like, I'm going to buy those spare ribs and I'm going to figure out what I want to do with them. And I'm going to make something really delicious and maybe I'll share them with people and maybe I won't. And, but it was sort of like treating myself to the joy of getting to have a creative experience, you know, and mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It is nice. I do have this built-in neighborhood and anytime I do cook stuff, I always just sort of like send an email to the street and I'm like, hey guys, like I was testing all these turkeys for Thanksgiving this year. And so for the past few months, like every time I cook a turkey, I'm like, there's a turkey on the table, come get it. Like I do not want any of this in my house. And so it's been kind of great to have a built-in audience. But yeah, I'm jealous a little bit of introverts who are stoked to cook for themselves because I don't always feel that for myself. I wish I could summon that joy a little bit better. But
Yeah.
And so yeah, but we still haven't even answered Deanna's question.
Deanna just wanted to cook turkey in a toaster oven.
She's like, what do I do with this turkey?
Come on.
Okay. I, not knowing the brand, provenance, or age of your toaster oven, I am going to suggest that we stay away from it. I have a toaster oven that I splurged on. It was my gift to myself, a $200 toaster oven. Changed my cooking, I will say, because it means I don't have to turn on my oven. I can roast a whole chicken in there. It's amazing. But I'm going to assume you have the kind I had before that, which was the like Black & Decker thing that I had since 1982 that my mom gave me. So
I think mine is literally that old. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah. And so, which I have to say toasts a nice piece of bread, but doesn't necessarily do a lot more than that. And so I'm going to say let's not put the turkey in there just because I'm not sure how evenly it'll get cooked. So let's go ahead and do it on the stovetop burner. And we have two options depending on whether or not you want to do a breast or a leg. So a leg, you can just easily braise like in a cast iron pan or a Dutch oven. So you could just, you know, super simply slice an onion, get some aromatic herbs in there, put whatever other vegetables you want in there.
Thyme, sage.
Yeah. Sage, maybe some black peppercorn. My favorite, a bay leaf.
This is a pro bay leaf show.
I'm, you know, the secret that's going to be discovered is that I am backed by Big Bay Leaf. Yeah. Corporate Bay Leaf sponsors me. What I would do is set your Dutch oven on the stove, heat it gently, melt a little butter in there, brown your turkey leg skin side down, You can flip it over and brown the other side too if you want. Take that out. And now you have some turkey fat and rendered butter in there, like melted mm-hmm. butter, kind of brown. And now you can just put some aromatic vegetables, a little onion, carrot, celery, some thyme, sage if you want, some bay leaf, black peppercorn, whatever. And then let that sort of cook down. Gently lay your brown turkey skin side up over there. And then if you have stock, throw a little stock in there. If you don't, water, maybe a little white wine, up to like mm-hmm. the first yeah. knuckle of your finger, or maybe I would say like a third of the way up the turkey leg, and sure. then put the lid on, bring it up to a simmer, and let it simmer until that meat is falling off the bone tender, which for that turkey leg could take maybe, I don't know, could take upwards of 2 hours, I would say. I'm not exactly sure. It's been a while since I braised a turkey leg. How do you know? Can you remember it, Francis?
Well, if it's a big leg, I don't know. With a chicken, I would start looking at like at an hour.
Yeah, at an hour. But a turkey leg, I'm like having a hard time.
Yeah, should an I, hour should and I, a half.
Yeah, maybe an hour maybe and a half.
Hour
yeah.
and a half, two-ish. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, you could just pierce it with like a paring knife and just check it. So yeah. so that's what I would do if it were. And honestly, you could do pretty much a similar treatment if it's a breast, and it would just take, and you could cook the breast on the bone in the same way. And it would just be kind of like not so different. Or if you want to mm-hmm. try roasting it, you know, like the Dutch oven was the original oven. And so you basically can just do your best to recreate an oven on top of your stove by using a Dutch oven and having it like over a steady flame. That's kind of like a steady medium flame. So what I would do is probably same thing. I would brown the skin, you know, of the turkey breast in some butter or oil, wipe out the pan completely, make sure there's no fat in there that's going to smoke. And then if you have some sort of little rack or something that you could put that turkey on so that it's not just sitting on the bottom of the pan.
Contacting the pan.
Yeah. Then maybe like, I don't even know what it could be. Like if you have... You know,
like a little rack
or a little steamer tray or something. If you have a steamer tray, sure, sure. just something. So it's like almost like its own little sort of oven rack. Put that in there and then put the lid on and let that cook until it registers 150 degrees on a thermometer, which for that turkey breast will take probably around 45 minutes. I mean, I haven't done it on the stove. It could take a little longer because you're going to be tinkering with that temperature, but it might take, you know, closer to an hour. But you're basically, you know, you're homesteading in your Dutch oven, which I kind of I kind of like this plan.
That's a cool vibe.
Yeah,
for a semi off-grid renovated shed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds totally right on. All right, Samin, thank you so much for your MacGyver, both your MacGyver instincts and your deep culinary knowledge and creativity.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope I hope some of this, you know, helps people and inspires them and comforts them. It's definitely like an interesting year, and I'm really excited to listen to your show. I'm really excited about all your other guests, and I wish you and everyone who's listening a really happy and comforting and delicious holiday.
Happy Thanksgiving, Samin.
Oh, thank you. Take care.
Samin Nosrat is the author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat and co-host of the podcast Home Cooking. Coming up, we've got Chef Mike Solomonoff all the way from Philadelphia. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is our annual Thanksgiving Day show, Turkey Confidential, from American Public Media. Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. In every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking an amazing meal. Listen as Ina does what she does best, make good conversation and delicious food while making it sound fun and easy. This season, Ina dives into conversation with astronaut and colonel Nicole Mann. As Ina teaches Nicole how to make seared scallops with celery root puree, they talk about everything from family to what foods Nicole really craves when she's in space. And listen in as Ina and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer David Remnick talk about music lessons and the value of developing language skills before joining their spouses for a lively conversation over a comforting dish of chicken parmesan. If you love a good chat over a great meal, you'll love Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts.
Splendid Table is brought to you by all the chickens at Locally Laid Egg Company. Producing high-quality, delicious eggs for over a decade, Locally Laid prioritizes good lives for their hens. Locally Laid Egg Company also partners with rural farmers to keep agriculture clucking along in Minnesota. Locally sourced, locally sold, that's Locally Laid. You can learn more about visiting the flock at the farm's Airbnb at locallylaid.com.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Francis Lamb, and you're listening to The Splendid Table's Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. The show is supported by Knowable, designed for those hungry to keep learning through audio. Knowable is a new destination for smart audio courses taught by experts in their field. Best-selling food writer Mark Bittman teaches simple, pragmatic cooking and eating intended to change the way listeners think about food altogether. Listen at knowable.fyi. All right, so here's our show today. It's a lot like it usually is on this day. It's you, it's me, it's fabulous guests, and it's your cooking questions. The one thing that is a little different is that we're not able to take your calls live today. Instead, we've asked you to send them to us as voice memos. Honestly, I miss talking to you directly, but this is a pretty close pandemic second. Anyway, we're getting back to your questions in just a minute, but first, someone left a voice memo for you.
Hey, it's Lynn. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. But boy, is this a different one. You know, we've never done this before. I was thinking the other day about the ways I want to spend today, or the possible ways, because I'm isolating, and so are most of my friends. And it occurred to me that there's downsides. Of course, we all know that. But you know, this is a time when I can connect maybe and take time to connect and catch up with people that I've just lost track of or I've fallen behind with. Instead of a big family gathering, it's a case of that cousin that you never get a chance to sit next to at the table. And you can Zoom or FaceTime. Point is, there are lots of ways that we can make all of this work, which you're probably already figuring out. Now, I must confess, this year, I have not done my great traditional Herman stuffing. I have not cooked a 14-pound turkey that I have marinated and labored over for 3 days. What's in the oven right now is a hoisin glazed chicken. I'm doing a stir-fry of Chinese broccoli. I'm doing a very simple but very, very rich panna cotta for dessert. Somewhere in there's going to be some really good wine. And then I'm going to sit back and watch one of my favorite old movies. So whatever your Thanksgiving is like right now, I'm thinking of you. I miss talking with you all. And may it be a good one.
That was our dear queen herself, the founding host of the show, Lynn Rosetto Casper. Happy Thanksgiving, Lynn. Turkey Confidential is supported by Knowable, featuring best-selling food writer Mark Bittman. Mark just released his new audio course, How to Eat Now, exclusively on Knowable, a new app where you can listen to expert-led audio courses. Mark teaches lessons on simple and healthy cooking and eating. Learn more at knowable.fyi to listen. All right, so back in the before times, and by that I mean early March, I took a trip to Philadelphia for a couple days. It was, well, certainly it was the greatest eating weekend of this year, but possibly of any other year. There's this incredible Thai restaurant there called Kalaya. That's down the street from the greatest hoagie shop on earth. There are amazing French-Lebanese pastries at Suraya. Philadelphia is just an incredible food town. And then, of course, there are all of Mike Solomano's restaurants. Zahav, Goldie, Laser Wolf, Kafar, they're all truly amazing, offering their takes on Israeli food, and we're so glad to have Mike here today. Hey, Mike, happy Thanksgiving, man.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Francis.
I'm so excited to have you, but I am especially excited because I heard you just got engaged.
I did.
Congratulations.
I did. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was...
Quarantine is more fun when you're in love, huh?
You know what it is? I think that we've made it through quarantine and through pandemic stronger, and we are not sick of each other. And I feel like that's the true test. So,
well, right on. Well, I'm very happy for you.
Thanks,
that's awesome.
Dude.
I thought of you this morning, not just because we were going to have this call together, because I was making oatmeal for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I flavored it with this thing that she calls my favorite honey, which is the Israeli date syrup, Ceylon.
Yeah, Ceylon.
That's right, that you turned me on to.
Yeah.
And this stuff is so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was tasting it and it actually tastes so autumnal to me. And so I was excited to use it. You know, it's like, it's crisp and cold today. And it's dark and sweet and kind of tart, and but sort of like clovey, sort of like sweet, spicy at the same time. And then I realized... I actually have no idea when dates are in season in Israel. So like this might actually have nothing to do with autumn from where they're from. Are there foods that scream fall in Israel to you?
Well, so that's a good question. A couple things. One, the date molasses, it doesn't matter like when it is produced or when it's in season because it holds so nicely. Okay. So I don't, you know, there is a date season in Israel, but Ceylon is its own. It doesn't even have the word date in it. All right. What's also very, very cool about Ceylon is that it's actually the word honey, the biblical word honey, dvash, which is actually the modern word, but the meaning of it back in the day, like back when Israel was the land of milk and honey, biblically, mm-hmm. is actually date molasses. There was no honey before. So when you hear milk and honey, it's actually almond milk and date molasses. And that's how important Ceylon is. Yeah. So really, really good. You know, you could, even if you wanted to go a little bit of raw tahina in the oatmeal with a little bit of the Ceylon, you've got like the peanut butter and jelly thing going on. It's so, so good. So that's
super cool.
Yeah. So I actually think that is a good autumnal dish. There's no autumn and there's no real fall in Israel in terms of like leaves changing and there is different produce and fruit and vegetables that are in season. There are figs and grapes, and that's olive harvesting season in Israel. But there's no, like, we don't, you know, they don't do Thanksgiving over there. There's plenty of, like, Anglos that have moved to Israel. So they'll, like, you know, they'll, like, roast a turkey or whatever. But it's still, like, 85 degrees out. So it doesn't really feel the same. Turkey is a really, really big thing in Israel in general.
Really?
Yeah, totally. I mean, shawarma, I'd say half of the shawarma in Israel is actually turkey schnitzel, turkey kebabs, turkey testicles are really big on the skewers. Turkey testicles are not abnormally big, but they're very popular in Israel.
They're really impressive.
Good Lord, look at that turkey. Yeah. So, but turkey is actually used a lot. You know, but like the idea of Thanksgiving is not really a thing over there. But you know that like good figs and grapes and olives are happening around the fall. And pomegranate too, very, very big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what do you normally do for Thanksgiving? Like obviously you live in Philadelphia, not Israel.
But... Yeah, so what I normally do is I just like make stuffing and I eat a lot of stuffing. You know, I think that the reason that you have Thanksgiving is stuffing. And I buy that, man. Right? I mean, it's the best.
I buy that. I'm very pro stuffing.
I think that that's the reason that you do it. And I think that like roasting a bird is fine. It's very, and we all get excited to do it, but more often than not, it's not that good. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think most people complain that it's dry. But yeah, it's hard. It's, you know, it's hard to cook a 15-pound ball.
Yeah, a 15-pound ball with, like, dark thigh meat that inevitably has to go longer than, like, the breast, you know? So you could do the old, I think this is, like, a Martha Stewart trick, but you dip, like, cheesecloth and butter, and you lay that on top of the turkey, and that helps. It's sort of like self-basting, but it also gets it really nice and crisp. I think that's really, really cool. I also think like...
Wait, have you done that?
Yeah, oh, totally. It's awesome. You take cheesecloth and you rinse it to get some of the starch out, and then you dip it in butter, and then you lay it right on top of the turkey. Like melted butter, and it not only bastes, but gets the skin like super crispy.
That sounds incredible.
I know. I want to do it to myself.
I've never heard that my entire life.
I want to wrap myself in cheesecloth of butter and just throw myself.
I'm going to wrap
throw myself on the grill right now.
Thank you, Martha.
Yes.
Martha, you know how to live. All right. Actually, we'll hold these turkey thoughts because we have a bunch of listeners who have left messages for you to answer. And I think one of them is really going to appreciate you right now. Her name is Maya.
Hi, this is Maya from Trinidad, California.
Hey, Maya.
I have procured a free-range local heritage turkey this year that I've spent almost 3 years trying to get onto the waiting list. So I'm very excited. They've informed me that the birds are pretty big. So I'm going to be getting a bird anywhere from 20 to 35 pounds.
Oh, wow.
I have found a couple recipes that are for barbecued turkey, but these recipes advise not going over a 15-pound bird because you don't want the bird to be in the danger zone for too long. Mm-hmm. So first question is, can you do a bird that big on the barbecue? Is it safe? If so, what do you suggest basting it with? Butter, olive oil. I know Lynn used to say she liked wine on the turkey. And if you think it might not be safe, what's another method? Can I start it in the oven and finish it on the barbecue? Also, just wanted to say, I love this show and it's provided me so much solace in this troubling times. Mm. So thanks a bunch and happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thanks, Maya.
Oh, thank you, Maya.
A 30-pound turkey, dude.
Dude, that is some... I don't even know. So I think the best thing to do... So first of all, grilling, you can definitely do, Maya. I prefer it. And I think the smoke... The fact that it's actually a big bird is good because it is enough time to be on the grill where it absorbs the smoke. You're not just like doing the thing where you like sear it, right? That's not even fun. I would definitely recommend... natural fuel. And I would actually spatchcock the turkey, which is not only a very fun word, but very, very effective, especially for something like this. The issue with a 30-pound bird is that you're going to put it in the oven and it is going to dry out. The breast is not going to be good by the time the thighs are cooked, right? What you do is take the backbone out and you sort of crack the breast from the interior so you can spread it out so it's like a sheet. Or sort of like a butterfly, a flat bird, which is what you want.
Well, actually, okay. Yeah. But with a 30-pound turkey, okay, so a spatchcock normally, if you do it with a chicken, say, you can do it, even do it with chicken shears.
Yeah.
You go up through the cavity and you cut the backbone out.
Which you can still do. You can still do that. Oh. I would still use shears and I would just actually favor each side of the. There's a point where on both sides of the rib cage, it meets the backbone. And it's just a softer spot that you can cut right through with shears.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I would just do that. And then, I mean, the issue is making sure that you have a grill that's big enough to accommodate a turkey that size because it will be super flat. But the presentation on it will be amazing because you could just lay that on a platter and you could even carve it, you know, cut it into eighths or whatever. But what's nice about that is that, especially with those big birds, is that it will take salting really well, curing really, really well, and it'll happen fast. Even brining, I mean, the issue with all this is like, especially a 30-pound, I mean, that would be like a bathtub scenario, but if you were to brine it, how long would it take for the brine or the marinade or the cure to permeate the meat? Like, it would take a really long time. So when you spatchcock, you really get both sides of it, which is what you want. And then you have control of grilling it and not overcooking, you know, the breast while you're waiting for the thighs. That's always the consideration with turkey that it gets people into trouble. You know, you slow roast it, but if the breast is too big and it's exposed to too much dry heat, it will inevitably become dry. So, yeah, I think spatchcock is the way to go. And I would definitely do like a marinade. I like the sort of onion juice marinade. I don't know if you've ever messed with that, Francis, but
no.
You puree onions with, you know, garlic, parsley, whatever you like. You can even do celery.
Just like whole raw onions, like in a blender?
Whole raw onions in the blender. And then you can pour, like I put allspice or baharat or even actually some of that Ceylan, you know, the date molasses that you love, in there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And rub it all over the turkey and let it sit. And then the onions add acid and sugar and help sort of break down the meat. And so when you cook it and roast it, it gets from the char with the grill. It's just, it's amazing. It's so savory. It's so delicious. And it permeates the meat and it perfumes it. And it's just, it's wonderful. So I would recommend that.
All right, I'm pureeing onions.
Yeah.
I might not get to a turkey this year, but I mean, it just sounds like a great thing for chicken. I mean, that sounds like it's just a super cool marinade for...
It's the best. It's so, so good. And even with a chicken, honestly, you could just... marinate it, and then when it's done, you sort of wipe it off and then put it skin side up, spatchcocked on a sheet tray, and just blast it in your oven or broiler. It's so good. So, so good.
All right, cool. Let's go to another call. And this one is from Fiona.
Okay, hi, Splendid Table. It's Fiona.
And Sophie.
And Pluto.
And Christopher.
And we were just wondering if you have any recommendations for a good Thanksgiving meal. We're thinking something Middle Eastern since we can't be with our family on Thanksgiving.
For sure vegetarian.
No turkey.
So yeah, like if you have any good recommendations for us, that would be great. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Wear a mask.
Wow. What a
happy Thanksgiving.
Fun. I want to have a Thanksgiving with those guys. They sound like a blast. Well, Fiona and Pluto and everybody, what we like to do, we cook Middle Eastern, we cook Israeli and Mediterranean and Arabic and Jewish and all those things kind of put together. What I like to do, though, is really nod towards like traditional Thanksgiving ingredients and then sort of go off the rails. Like take whole sweet potatoes. And then toss them in olive oil, salt, garlic, and paprika, and then go like really low temperature roast in the oven, skins, everything, not covered, just low temperature for, depending on the sweet potato, it could be, you know, 300 degrees or 275 degrees for 3 hours, you know? Okay. And the skins will get nice and dark and the interior will be, really, really soft. And then I'll yank them out and then just sort of smash them onto a plate. Separately, labneh. That's it for the sweet potato. But then to garnish it, we'll labneh, which is Arabic style yogurt.
Yeah.
You could even use, Fiona, you could even use like a Greek yogurt that's strained with a little bit of rasped or very lightly or finely grated garlic, raw garlic into the labneh with lemon juice and salt. And even like diced cucumber, red onion, you can even evoke like tzatziki if you'd like.
Yeah.
And then you drizzle that on the sweet potato and you've got something sweet and concentrated and savory and roasty. And then something that's very bright, acidic and sort of like creamy. And that also visually gives you like sweet potato marshmallow. And so different than what, you know, we're used to. The problem also with Thanksgiving is that it's like starch on starch on starch. Like, where's the acid? Like cranberry sauce? I mean, it is fun and delicious, but you cannot just take cranberry sauce. That's not going to cut through gravy, stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potato. You need more. You need it to, you know, and the labneh will kind of cut through all those things.
Yeah.
All right. So those
are my
thoughts.
Super rad. What about, you mentioned you're a stuffing fan. How do you do your stuffing?
Well, so typically I go like not Middle Eastern. I go like cornbread and like chorizo or sausage or even like cotechino, like Italian sausage, because it's really like peppery and sweet. So I like that in stuffing. This year, though, at Laser Wolf, our kebab shop, we actually have taken leftover pita and we've made merguez from turkey. And like turkey, like giblets, like livers. And we fold that into dried pita with za'atar and chicken stock and celery and onions, right? Because the celery and onions like register as stuffing. And then,
Totally. Wait, in the merguez, you're using like a Moroccan style merguez, like a lamb sausage?
So it's Moroccan flavored, but we use turkey in it.
Okay.
We use this turkey merguez to bind the pita and the stock and like the rest of the aromatics. And then we bake that off. So it's like a pita stuffing. It's really delicious.
That sounds rad. And like anything you put giblets in, I'm totally down for. But you're totally right. Like celery is...
You need it.
I think celery is like the unsung hero
of Thanksgiving, right?
Thanksgiving.
Dude, celery is amazing.
Because it totally is what makes stuffing taste like stuffing.
You need it. Celery and sage. And we don't use sage, but for bitter, we use za'atar, which is really nice. But I don't know. What do you do with your stuffing?
I'm a huge fan of various sausage stuffings. But yeah, and actually I say that because there is actually a family connection to it in the sense that I didn't grow up with, you know, the typical Thanksgiving foods. It wasn't a thing in my home. And I don't actually remember why. But at some point we started getting, I'm sure because like they had a special on like Costco or something. Yeah.
Right.
But we started getting individual turkey breasts that we would just bake for like dinner on a normal night. It wasn't on Thanksgiving. And yeah. I think maybe it came with like some sausage stuffing. And sooner or later, we all just realized like all we ate was the stuffing and not the actual turkey breast. And so we just became like just gaga for sausage stuffing.
Stuffing
so,
freaks.
If I were to make it today, what I would do is I would take bulk sausage. I would probably soak some bread in some stock. I just sort of sweat a whole bunch of celery and onions and mix it all together. Maybe I would put some apple in there just for a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of just a little bit of acidity and just kind of like bake it off and maybe until you get a little crust and I would call it.
Yeah, that sounds good, dude. That sounds really, really good. I feel like I never have done this, but I think that matzo would make a really good sort of stuffing, you know? Like you could really... You need it to be a little dry, and then you need it to also be dense, right? And matzah doesn't have a ton of water by itself, so you could really sort of pack it in there. But I don't know. I think that we should do a little stuffing potluck. Can we do that at some point? We can meet somewhere, have like four different
just
kinds of stuffing.
Stuffing potluck?
Yeah. I think a stuffing potluck would be like the ideal Thanksgiving. In my opinion,
I mean, after the pandemic, I'm there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's have one more call. We have Ellie.
Hi, this is Ellie from Minneapolis. This year for Thanksgiving, I will be up in northern Minnesota with a very small group of family. I will be missing my cousin and her new preemie baby. They won't be able to join us for health reasons. Feeling excited to see those I can see and feeling sad to miss those that we won't be able to see. This year, I would really like to have some new innovative ideas for how to use wild rice. It's one of my favorite Thanksgiving staples, but we do the same thing with it, and I just like some new energy in it. Thank you.
Wow. Great question, Ellie.
Always down for some wild rice energy. You know, growing up, if the only wild rice I ever saw was in a grocery store out of a box or whatever. And then I had wild rice in the Twin Cities that was local, you know, hand harvested wild rice. Yeah. And it is
next level.
Amazing.
Yeah. So good.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful food.
It is. You get, it like, is the, beautiful. And it's actually like totally like American, you know? What I do with wild rice, actually, I make kibbeh, which is not, certainly not traditionally Thanksgiving, but you know, it's usually a meat and bulgur wheat sort of like patty. And I'll actually put cooked wild rice in the patty. And when you fry it, it gets like really, that sort of chewy popcorn-y thing is wonderful. Really, really good.
Oh, cool.
But I think the easiest thing to do is you could almost like riff off of like the wild rice stuffing.
Course 8 on the stuffing potluck.
There it is. Here we go. It always comes back to that. But okay, so here's what I think we should do, Ellie. You should take the wild rice and cook it. Separately, take leeks and saute leeks, okay? And then take shredded potato and mix it with the leeks and the wild rice to make like a potato pancake situation and then fry those.
Okay.
And then I think you're good with like applesauce. I think that would be wonderful. There's a leek patty that's eaten a lot in like, it's Bulgarian. That's where I'm from. Leek, the word for leek is prasa. And it's like a potato pancake with tons of sauteed leeks in it. I think that if you add wild rice to that and fry them off, you'll beat everybody in Thanksgiving.
That sounds great. Yeah, because the wild, right, like, it has such good texture.
Mm-hmm.
It has such chew. I could totally see that in a potato pancake. That sounds great. Well, Mike, it has been a blast talking with you, as it always is. Congratulations again.
Oh, thank you so much.
Your engagement.
Thank you so much. It's so good catching up. And have a great holiday.
Yeah, you too. Happy Thanksgiving. Mike Solomonov is the author of Israeli Soul and is the chef owner of Zahav and More restaurants in Philadelphia. This year's Turkey Confidential is supported by Knowable. Designed for those hungry to keep learning through audio, Knowable is a new destination for smart audio courses taught by experts in their field. Best-selling food writer Mark Bittman teaches simple, pragmatic cooking and eating, intended to change the way listeners think about food altogether. Listen at knowable.fyi. Thank you for spending part of your day with us. It's been a blast talking with all of you. And from our family to yours today, happy Thanksgiving. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Turkey Confidential, the Splendid Table's Thanksgiving Day broadcast. We are brought to you by American Public Media and supported by Knowable, with audio courses like Mark Bittman's How to Eat Now. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. If you have joined us before, you know the drill. It's live radio with your last-minute cooking questions, and me and our fantastic guests helping you through any kind of Thanksgiving Day kitchen quandary. Only this year it's a little different, because we couldn't gather a whole production team in a tiny live radio studio today. My guests and I are celebrating with you another way, by taking your pre-recorded questions. So thank you for all your voice memos, calls, and questions, and please, we want to see what's going on in your kitchens and dining rooms today. Tag us on Instagram at Splendid Table, or use the hashtag Turkey Confidential or hashtag My Splendid Table. A little later in the hour, I'll chat with Nora McInerney, host of the podcast Terrible, Thanks for Asking, and chef and internet cooking video star Sola Elwewi. But first, I mean, Jacques Pepin needs hardly any introduction. Once the personal chef of French President Charles de Gaulle, Jacques came to America and reinvented himself, as so many immigrants do, and in his case, as one of our finest cooking teachers, really one of the first TV food celebrities. We are so honored to have him here today. Hi, Chef. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
I'm so excited to talk with you. So I've been a fan of yours basically my entire life, but I think you've been so instrumental in how I learned about food when I was young, but I want to get to your early memories. You came to America in 1959, I believe.
Yes. And how old were you?
Okay, I was a mere idea.
Okay. All right.
But do you remember what your first impressions of American Thanksgiving were?
Oh, yes. Very well. Actually, I came to America. Most immigrants come to America to get a better life, especially, or because of economic condition, or because of racial condition, or political condition, or religious condition. I didn't really have any of this. I had a very good job in France, and my parents had a restaurant. So I said, I'll go to America for a year, maybe two, learn the language a little bit and come back. Mm-hmm. But the first day when I come to New York, I absolutely loved it. And my first Thanksgiving, I remember with friend in New York, I said, this is the greatest holiday of all. Really? I don't like holiday which are because of some type of battle or fighting between two countries that are a thousand of dead, or because of some religion for one thing, or because you have to bring gift. Yeah, you don't have to bring gift. It's all getting together to eat, to drink together, to have a good time. This is the greatest holiday. Yes. Yeah.
And do you remember the food? Do you remember looking at the food and thinking, traditional
food?
Well,
that may have been the first time that I had a pumpkin pie, and I said, they must have made a mistake. They put sugar in that pumpkin, because the pumpkin in France it's a squash. So we use it to do a gratin or something else. You don't put sugar in it. You know, so now I'm used to it. But even in the book, my new book here, I have a gratin of pumpkin pie, as we used to do. That is, I took a can of pumpkin puree without salt or sugar in it. But then I add Gruyere in it, some cheese and some eggs and some cream and salt, pepper, and you do a beautiful gratin, you know. But oh, there I had it sweet, so it was kind of strange. Of course, I love turkey, so no problem with the turkey. That's my two dish that I still do. This year, of course, it's a smaller affair than we usually have, but Claudine is going to come, my daughter Claudine, and my granddaughter and my son-in-law, and that's about it with us. And we're going to do Thanksgiving. We're going to do Brussels sprout, because people want Brussels sprout. We're going to have the turkey, of course, giblet gravy, and the stuffing, corn stuffing. And I'm probably going to do an apple tart in addition to the pumpkin pie, and maybe some other pie. I don't know. But usually we have more than enough. Wine, champagne. So, yeah.
That part of the menu, I'm sure, is also well stocked.
Yeah.
You know, I remember seeing a video, a TV show, when you cooked. I think you had several TV shows, series, when you cooked with Julia Child. And I remember one where you and Julia cooked Thanksgiving together, and I remember you
had
massive turkey. And and I remember reading much later on that, you know, people would comment on your shows, and they would joke that, you know, she was really the French chef, and you were the American one.
Yes, that's true. I mean, we have many letters this way. And I did not want to do the turkey the way we did it. We argue for hours. Finally, we did it the way she wanted. At the beginning of that show, people don't realize that we didn't have any recipe. We came to the show without recipe. We decided, let's do stew, or let's do eggs, or let's do whatever. And then we could use whatever we want. We had no recipe. In fact, when we finished the show, it took 2 years to put it on the air because of Knopf. Random House had to do the book with it. So they had to look at those shows ad nauseam to try to reproduce the recipe to call us, because usually when you do a show, you come with a bunch of recipes. Yeah. But this wasn't the case there. So Julia told me, just write down what you want to do. So I wrote down maybe 80 ideas, and she did the same thing. And I think 3 or 4 of my ideas went through. The rest was what she wanted to do. So.
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, honestly, as a cookbook editor, hearing you tell that story just gave me a little bit of a heart palpitation.
Oh, yeah.
I can only imagine having to make a cookbook retroactively by watching the show. All right. Well, like I said, we have so many callers who want to ask you questions about cooking and cooking for this holiday specifically. So let's get right to them. I want to start with Peter.
Hey there. It's Peter calling from Portland.
Hi, Peter.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. As weird as the holiday as this may be this time around. I have a quick question about mashed potatoes. Firstly, I guess, how does Jacques like to make them? And secondly, the more important question for me, can I make them in advance and reheat them in order to alleviate a little bit of that stress actually on the day of the cooking? How would I go about and do that? Take care, everyone, and mask up.
Thank you. Well, yeah, you can do them. It doesn't really matter. When I do my mashed potato now, I change. But now, the way I do it, I like it the best. Peeled potato, I put garlic in it. So I put 2 or 3 cloves of garlic peeled with the potato, and just enough water, barely to cover the potato, because I don't want to throw out any water. So I cook the potato, I salted it, cook the potato 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes until it's well cooked. Then I mash up that potato, usually with a hand masher, and I put butter in it. So very often now, I don't put any cream, I don't put any milk, but I put a fair amount of butter. Like if you have a couple of pounds of potato, you put at least a stick of butter. And with the water that you cook the potato in, the garlic and two, and that's perfectly fine. To reheat it, you can put it in a container that goes in the microwave oven and reheat it. And another thing that you can do, that we do after we use the mashed potato the day after. If you have some leftover, you take your mashed potato. Let's say if you have 2-3 cups of mashed potato leftover, you put a couple of eggs in it, salt, pepper, some Gruyere, cheese. You mix it well, put it into a gratin dish with some Parmesan cheese on top, and you do what we call a pomme mondeur, golden rib, because it blows up a little bit like a souffle. So that's a great way of using it.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. Chef, why do you, this is so interesting. Why do you, so you, like you said, you cover the potatoes with water and then you don't actually drain the potatoes. So you actually will mash the potato with the cooking water?
Yeah. So I used to do it by cooking it, draining the potato. Yeah. And in the drained potato, I put some milk and some butter. Yeah. So now I don't put the milk, I put more butter, but no milk. And I think it has a better taste with the garlic and the water of the potato.
Oh, that's interesting. And does it taste more like, so taking the milk flavor away and using the potato water, does it taste more like potato? Like what's the thinking behind that?
No thinking. I think it tastes better. I try it all kind of different way. I think this is more truly a taste of good potato. I mean, I don't put as much butter as Robuchon. You know, Robuchon, that great French chef, does a mashed potato where he put the same amount of butter than potato. That's a lot of butter. So.
God bless him. God bless him. May he rest in peace. All right, let's go to Danielle and Ben.
Hi, Splendid Table. My name is Danielle.
And my name's Ben.
And we're calling from Western Massachusetts. This Thanksgiving, we'll be spending some time apart. I will be with my dad in Memphis.
And I'm going to be with my folks in the Berkshires. But something that we want to share is one of our favorite holiday recipes.
Oh, good.
And that's my stepmom Valerie's carrot souffle. It's a sweet orange custardy treat and not unlike refined baby food. She introduced me to this recipe almost 10 years ago, and honestly, I could eat a whole souffle with just a small helping of turkey, and I'd be a happy girl. It's very true. But what's our question for you? What is your favorite souffle recipe? Cheesy? Chocolatey? We would love to add it to our souffle repertoire.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, by far, my favorite souffle recipe, I have that in several books, in The Apprentice and so forth, is my mother's recipe, cheese souffle. When my mother died, she was 2 months short of 100, but she got married, she was 17 years old. And my father liked souffle, and she was a pretty good cook, but not that great. So he said, can you make a souffle? She said, yes. She asked a friend of hers, she said, oh, it's very easy, cheese souffle. You do a white sauce, a bechamel, that is, you know, a butter and some flour and milk to do a white sauce. And you put cheese in it and you put eggs in it, put it in the oven. That's it. Oh, she didn't know. She didn't tell her you have to separate the egg, beat the egg white or whatever. So she never did. So you do a bechamel. You don't want to put it your bechamel when it's boiling hot, but you leave it 10, 15 minutes outside so that it's not too hot. You beat 4 or 5 eggs like you do for an omelette. Mix it in there. Put some Gruyere also in cheese, and I put it on a gratin dish with some Parmesan or whatever on top. You do a beautiful souffle, it really goes up a lot, and you can do that souffle like a day ahead and leave it in the refrigerator ready to go into the oven. So it's a great souffle.
It works, and it puffs without separating the eggs and whipping. And
yes, I realized that it puffs exactly like when you do choux à la crème, you know, a profiterole or choux. So that's basically the same idea. You know, you have water and flour or milk and flour. You make a paste and you beat your eggs in it too. And you have your cream puff dough. And you do a cream puff and they puff up and you don't separate the eggs and beat them up. So it's a bit of the same idea, you know.
Oh, you're blowing my mind. You're blowing
my
mind.
Yeah, you got to try that one. It's easy.
Well, actually, I know Danielle and Ben just mentioned their family's carrot souffle. I never had carrot souffle. Have you? How would you do a carrot souffle?
Well, the carrot souffle, I do it. I do it more on the salty side. That is, a carrot souffle, I usually put either hazelnut or walnut or pumpkin seed, rather on a puree of carrot, and then I put a bit of cream in the puree of carrot. Then I beat my eggs, add them to it, salt, pepper, the pumpkin seed. and you know, in an oven. I like to do souffle very often in gratin dish. And the reason is that, like the souffle of my mother, then you have a larger surface, more crust on top and in the bottom, rather than on a conventional souffle dish. By the time you serve the first or second portion, then the center kind of collapses on itself and you don't really have so much of the top or the crust of the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So the carrot souffle, instead of the bechamel, instead of the white sauce, you use carrot puree. And then, like you said, you beat the egg.
Oh. Right. And if you think that your carrot puree is a bit too thin, then you put a couple of tablespoons of potato starch or corn flour or whatever in it, to thicken it a little bit. Yeah, sure.
Ah, it's fascinating. And it sounds so fancy if you make souffle all the time at home.
Yes.
All right. Let us go to Maggie.
Hello, Splendid Table. I'm calling from St. Louis. And this year, in an effort to kind of maintain safe distance, my family is thinking of making individual Thanksgiving dinners, which we can deliver to relatives who are kind of outside of our immediate social circle or those who are at, you know, an increased risk, so that we can eat together but still kind of maintain separate households. And our household will probably make our own kind of small bird this year, a small turkey, but we're thinking of doing something like a Cornish hen or another small meat to take to other family members who are in small households. And so we were wondering if you had any suggestions for, you know, interesting methods or preparations other than, you know, your basic roasting for other small game birds. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you. Well, you know, certainly from quail to squab to Cornish hen, you can do them grill or you can put them in the oven. But frankly, there is something, I mean, for me, if I go somewhere for Thanksgiving, I want turkey, period. So there is nothing wrong about doing your turkey. In fact, it's probably going to be easier for you. You cook your turkey, then you carve your turkey, then you divide it into 10 or 15 containers, and you have your giblet gravy on top, you have the stuffing underneath, a bit of the mashed potato we talked about, a bit of Brussels sprout or whatever, or a puree of sweet potato. And you can do your individual little package like this, and it will sound more Thanksgiving, certainly, than if you do it with corn. And it probably will be easier for you. You know,
yeah. I have to say too, listening to the question makes me think of the first Thanksgiving I had to help prepare in a restaurant. It was a place called Higgins in Portland, Oregon. Wonderful, wonderful restaurant. Amazing chef, Greg Higgins. And I started working there, I think literally 2 days before Thanksgiving. So I walked into the middle of a cyclone. And I remember, one of the cooks pulling out of the oven a huge roasting tray of turkey leg confit. So they got, you know, however many dozens, if not hundreds of turkeys, broke them all down, and all the legs they put in the one giant tray, and, you know, very, very, you know, I think first they salted and them overnight with salt and some spices and herbs, wash it off the next day, the legs, I mean, and then you know, just place them in a roasting pan and top them with duck fat and just let them bake essentially at like 275, maybe 300 degrees for a couple of hours until the turkey legs were so silky and tender and beautiful. And I think if you wanted to do something like that, you know, maybe you get turkey legs. And so each family can get a turkey leg. Maybe they don't have to get a whole turkey, but they can still have the sensation of carving. But that would just be so beautiful. And I love turkey dark meat, especially.
I think you're right there. But, you know, I would do exactly what you're doing. And on the same time, I would take the large breast of turkey. I mean, you know, I worked for Howard Johnson for 10 years. And our director of research, we used to bone out the turkey this way, take the two breasts, put them together. And of course, they were vacuum packed in a very tight thing. And we poached them very slowly in liquid like that. They were extremely tender. And too, they were good for sandwich, other thing. The point is that you can roast your breasts separately or cook them slowly this way. Then you put your dark meat underneath, a nice slice of white meat on top. Very tender. It probably cooking it separate like that, you probably end up with a better result than putting it together, because the leg always take longer than the breast. The breast always get drier than the leg, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought I heard your dog barking in the back too.
Yeah,
how was Gaston?
Yeah, he did. He did. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Someone is outside cutting the grass. I think.
He's getting ready for his turkey.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Seattle for our next question.
Hello, my name is Michaela, and I'm in Seattle. My partner and I are planning a vegetarian Thanksgiving meal for just the two of us.
Okay.
Oh, good.
But it's looking like this year we won't have an oven.
Yeah.
We have a stovetop and an outdoor grill that's really conveniently hooked up to the house's gas line.
Okay.
But since November is Seattle's rainiest month of the year and one of the more chilly ones, we'd like to minimize our time going back and forth to the grill or make sure it's really worth it. We'd love to spend the day cooking, but without an oven or a group to cook for this year, we're a little short on ideas, and we're hoping you'll have some suggestions for us. Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving. Mm.
So, Chef, what would you do? Would you use the grill?
Yes, of course, you can always use the grill. You don't have to. I mean, I cook, in summer, I cook almost everything on my grill. Like, I take corn, I put them in the aluminum foil, I put a piece of butter in it, dash of salt, put that on that. I do potato, well, directly because I want the crust on the potato. But some stuff I do in aluminum foil, some stuff I do directly on it, that's only the meat or fish. So, yeah, you can use the grill outside for many, many things. I don't know whether you can make a soup on the grill, but you probably could. If you put the grill, you put your pot and you cook there, you know. So there's nothing wrong with using the grill outside. I use mine a lot. Yeah.
I mean, I think, so she's in Seattle. She's a vegetarian, and it's in November. And all I can think is in the Northwest, you have such extraordinary wild mushrooms. Just amazing wild mushrooms. I think probably they might still have chanterelles at that time. And I think using the grill for those wild mushrooms, you can make this beautiful, I would imagine, like a grilled mushroom ragu. Maybe you grill it, grill the mushrooms to get the color and flavor, and then maybe you bring it in and cook them down with a little bit of cream and a little bit of shallots. Some thyme and sage.
I don't know. I pick up a lot of mushroom here in summer also. So I don't know in Seattle, but I don't think even in Seattle it's the season now for wild mushroom. Maybe the end of it, a couple of things. But yeah, I mean, as you say, you saute some chanterelles or you put them on the grill. And for me, you do them in an omelette, a big omelette. I mean, I don't know if you can eat eggs, but that's great. My mother always used to do a mushroom omelette like this and let it cool off and serve it at room temperature in big slice with olive oil and herb on top, you know. So that's a nice thing to do too, you know.
Yeah. And, that, you know, I think people hear omelette and they think breakfast, but like something like that, if you make with like really beautiful ingredients, that could be very festive. I think that could be very celebratory.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, for sure. And then there is so many vegetables for Thanksgiving, from our mashed potato to a sweet potato puree to the Brussels sprout to the puree of carrot we discussed to, I mean, basically anything in season, all of the root vegetable, puree of turnips and all that, you can do all kind of thing with it. Puree of turnips or sliced turnips with a little bit of sugar and salt on top of it on the grill. It's really good.
Oh, cool.
Get crystallized and... and the same thing with the sweet potato. I cut the sweet potato in half, put them on the grill. I mark them, you know, with a crisscross so that they can cook faster. And I turn them and I pour a little bit of honey and melted butter on top of it, salt, pepper, and that's really good.
Oh, I never thought of grilling sweet potatoes and grilling turnips with salt and a little sugar. Is a revelation. I've never thought of that. But I love it. So the sugar will... Like brulee a little bit? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it caramelized a little bit, yes.
Oh, that sounds great. All right, I want to go to one more question. And this one's about cranberries.
Okay.
Hello. I've realized that I have a ton of whole cranberries in the freezer. And everything that I've looked up for recipes have mostly been cranberry sauce or things kind of related specifically to Thanksgiving or just those sort of traditional meals. I'm wondering if there's any way that I can use them in a more savory dish or like anything else that's more inventive. For some reason, cranberries seem to be the one thing that I can't find that many recipes for. I don't know why, but thank you.
Well, cranberry, you know, is just a fruit. I mean, it's more astringent. But I very often, certainly in summer, when I do a raspberry, a strawberry tart, I put cranberry in it. That gives me a bit of a contrast. But certainly for Thanksgiving there, I would put cranberry in my stuffing. You know, corn stuffing with cranberry in it is very good. In addition, because I do a cranberry sauce, I put the rind of lime and lemon on top of mine. And I cook that. I love it this way. But regardless, my wife requests a can of strawberry jelly. regardless. So we do that. But yes, of course, you can use them in different type of puree. We talked about before doing a puree of carrots and all that. You put some cranberry in it, would be good. You put that in apple. Also, you do a stew of apple. You put some cranberry in it. It's very good. And so forth.
Yeah. You know, my wife loves to make cranberry sauce, and I really love her cranberry sauce. But, you know, you buy a 3-pound bag of it, and people use a teaspoon of it or 2 teaspoons of it on their plate, and now you're left with all this cranberry sauce. Or you don't make all the sauce, and then now you have, you know, 2 of your 3 pounds of cranberries lying around. And I think people always look at it, and they only go to Thanksgiving in their mind. And it's hard for them to think of other things to do with it because it's just so tied in our imagination to that one dish, that one garnish on the holiday. So thank you for freeing us from that.
When you serve your Thanksgiving dinner, I do the carving and you take the bowl of cranberry sauce and you serve them. You give them 3 tablespoons each whether they like it. So you're sure you use it.
Yeah. See, it takes a great chef to know all kinds of angles.
Okay, right.
All right, Chef, it was so great to talk with you. I'm so glad to get to have you on this day. And our listeners, I'm sure, at home are so excited to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure.
And happy cooking.
Yeah, happy cooking to you.
Thank you. Take care.
Jacques Pepin's latest book is Quick and Simple. Coming up, Nora McInerney, host of the podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. And then back to your questions with Sola and Whaley. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is our annual Thanksgiving Day show, Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Francis Lamb, and you're listening to The Splendid Table's Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. We're supported by Knowable, designed for those hungry to keep learning through audio. Knowable is a new destination for smart audio courses taught by experts in their field. Best-selling food writer Mark Bittman teaches simple, pragmatic cooking and eating, intended to change the way listeners think about food altogether. Listen at knowable.fyi. So we usually focus on your cooking questions on this show, but look, this year Thanksgiving and all the holidays really will be a little different for a lot of people. Nora McInerney is host of the podcast Terrible, Thanks for Asking, and she knows something about how to deal with rough times with warmth and humor. So who better to talk to today? Hey Nora, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Francis.
I'm so glad to have you here today. And, you know, so every year, you know, honestly, I love doing this show kind of even more than, like, Thanksgiving itself. Because I just get such a charge out of talking to people and helping them celebrate the day. But, you know, obviously this year, Thanksgiving is not normal for a lot of people. And I think for some people, like, a really hard one. And you are so amazing about talking about tough times. What do you think of Thanksgiving this year?
I think that here's the thing about Thanksgiving for me is that I consider Thanksgiving an optional holiday. And by that, I mean, I come from a family who holds no traditions, which is perhaps our only tradition, is that we are a family who plays it by ear.
Okay.
And to me, the most memorable Thanksgivings and the most memorable holidays are ones where something went horribly awry, where something was just not as expected, not as planned. When I was 11 years old, our dog ate the turkey. I don't understand how it even happened, but he ate it. And then he was a bearded dog, you know, the kind that has a bearded dog. I think that's the breed. And he wiped his beard up and down the hallway. He wanted to clean up. I will always remember that Thanksgiving. I will always remember the Thanksgiving where my mother and my aunt decided, you know, let's have 100 some people in my uncle's photo studio. And, you know, maybe the fact that one of my uncles is a wine dealer should have been taken into consideration, because all of the grown-ups were a little bit too busy socializing. Dinner was not served till 9 p.m. and the children were not happy.
Yeah.
Those are the memorable ones to me. And Thanksgiving is hard for a lot of people, I think, because we assume that our gratitude is at odds with our grief or with what we are struggling with. When in reality, I think that the two end up sitting at the table together more often than not.
Mm. Tell me more.
So 2014 was really kind of like my big year. Okay. My big year. And by big, I mean just the worst. 2014 was my personal 2020. And, my dad died. My husband died. I lost a pregnancy. This was all within 6 weeks. And my husband died 3 days before Thanksgiving, Francis. If ever there were a year for us to be like, you know, maybe Thanksgiving this year, we all just lay on a couch in our pajamas and pass back and forth a box of Lucky Charms that we eat with our bare hands. It was 2014. And instead, we went through this grand performance of a typical American Thanksgiving, where we sat around a table and we tried to pretend like things were normal. And they were very deeply not normal. And I remember us going around the table and doing this, like, let's everybody say what we are grateful for. We had never done that before. I don't think we've done it since. And and it was like this collective performance of trying to prove that, you know, we weren't ingrates, that, you know, that don't worry. No, we're still grateful. And I look back and I just think, if ever there were a time to let yourself just have kind of an okay-ish time, it's that. And so that's kind of how I think of all holidays, is let them be what they are. And this Thanksgiving, it will be odd. It will be strange. It will be unusual. It will be incredibly sad for a lot of people. It's going to be a really, really hard day to try to gather up all of your positivity, and you don't have to, because your gratitude is not at odds with the reality of your pain. And you got to pull up a seat for both of them, especially in 2020.
I'm so with you. Like, there is this sort of pressure to demonstrate that you have something that you're grateful for.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we do have gratitude. But at the same time, I don't think we should let that pressure make us have to force a smile, which only feels more sad.
Yeah, it will make you feel lonelier. And likewise, if you just wake up on Thanksgiving and you are filled to the brim with thankfulness, go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it. You also don't have to pretend to be, you know, bummed out with the rest of the world. Like, you are absolutely allowed to celebrate how you feel. Go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, but now I do have to ask you, what are you thankful for this year?
I am so glad you asked. I am so thankful that we have entered the time of year where it is not only appropriate but celebrated to spend a lot of time sitting on the couch watching the corniest of holiday films on whatever streaming service you prefer. I'm talking escaping for 60 to 90 minutes into a world where everybody is returning to their small town to save a B&B, to pick up a shift at their dad's hardware store, where love and self-discovery is right around the corner, and it's wrapped up in an unexpected package that is always a ridiculously handsome man. That is what I am. That is what I am grateful for.
We'll all get to see Reese Witherspoon talking a Southern accent again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we are ready. We are ready for this.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving, Nora.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Frances, or maybe a bad Thanksgiving. Maybe a happy-ish Thanksgiving. Yeah, yeah. Maybe just a blank Thanksgiving. Like just Thanksgiving to you, Frances.
Whatever kind you have.
Whatever kind you have.
Nora McInerney is the host of the podcast Terrible, Thanks for Asking. You can join her and her very special guests for an evening of comedy, music, and a Worst of the Holidays award show in the tradition of Terrible, Thanks for Asking's Happy-ish Holidays specials. RSVP today at happyishholidays.com. And she says, it's a holiday party for the rest of us. Turkey Confidential is supported by Knowable, featuring best-selling food writer Mark Bittman. Mark just released his new audio course, How to Eat Now, exclusively on Knowable, a new app where you can listen to expert-led audio courses. Mark teaches lessons on simple and healthy cooking and eating. Learn more at knowable.fyi to listen. To know Sola Elwaili on the internet is to love her. A former restaurant chef, she's worked at amazing restaurants in New York City for years. Actually, I was incredibly lucky to have lived around the corner from one of the restaurants where she was the pastry chef, and I totally remember when she started. She made this ice cream sundae that I will, for some reason, never forget for the rest of my life. Anyway, she takes all that expertise and translates it into some of the most fun and informative cooking videos you can find online. She was a star at Bon Appetit and now has her own series, which you can find on YouTube. Hey, Sola, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I want to actually start. You know, it's been such a weird year, right? And I think it's really been a really great and powerful practice for me to kind of like practice gratitude and think about what I'm thankful for. And I think this is really, you know, Thanksgiving, right? So this is a moment for that. And I don't want to tell you what you're thankful for, but I was thinking about that, and I was looking, you know, just sort of at the arc of your career and just being so amazed by it. I mean, you've been a chef at, you know, high technique, fine dining restaurants for a long time. 2 years ago, you had a restaurant, like a sweet, cool diner with your husband. And then you moved into food writing. And, you know, in a very short time, you are a bona fide cooking video star. And so you have a new video series, a couple of them. One of them is called Stump Sola. I guess you'd say the title's pretty self-explanatory. But how would you describe it? Because it's pretty wild.
We just try to think of things that will be fun for me to do. That's basically it. I mean, I guess the plan was to come up with some kind of conceit to let me do weird stuff that's fun that I would probably be doing anyways on the weekends at home. But now you can all see it. Because, you know, my husband is also a chef, so we pretty much spend our weekends having little Stump Solas at home.
Really? Like, this is your legit lifestyle?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the only day we really have together is Sundays. So we usually go to the market, buy random things, and then make each other snacks. Just back and forth, snack attacks.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's so adorable. I mean, one of your videos is, what was it, a 7-course meal out of a convenience store. Mm-hmm. It was another one, like setting soup on fire. It's like, that's how you roll at home?
Yeah, I mean, I really like cooking spontaneously, because recipe development is all just like lots of thought and planning and testing, so it's fun to have an opportunity to just like spontaneously cook. Because even when you're in a restaurant, you're just working on consistently making the same thing over and over again, which is really fun in a totally different way, but it's kind of nice to be able to just let loose and make something totally random that no job would ever want me to do.
Well, I am so happy that you get to spend some part of this day with us. Your family is Bengali,
mm-hmm.
right? And I've been thinking a lot about Thanksgiving lately, especially like what Thanksgivings were like in immigrant families.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in an immigrant family, and my Thanksgivings were just so different than everyone else's, in large part because a lot of times they barely even existed. You know, like mm-hmm. my parents didn't grow up with it, so they didn't really know what is considered to be the tradition. And, you know, we just never really celebrated until we kind of like make our own sort of version of it, or sort of celebration of it. Did you grow up with Thanksgiving in your home?
Thanksgiving is a really big deal in our home. When my parents first came to America, my mom worked in an Oral-B factory, and her coworkers were really welcoming and really embraced her. And she had this one coworker who invited the family over. This was before I was born, but I've heard the story. This one coworker invited everyone over to her house and had my mom come super early and cooked through every single traditional Thanksgiving dish with my mom. And we're talking really, really traditional, like green bean casserole with like canned green beans, canned cream corn, stovetop stuffing, gravy from a box. And it was just like, it was such a welcoming way to come to America that Thanksgiving became really important. And every year my mom would make that exact same meal.
Oh my God.
So I grew up with like the very, very classic American Thanksgiving. And then as I got older, my mom kind of let me take it over. And I started to like still make those classics, but from scratch. You know, each year I'd try and level it up. You know, we would blanch our own green beans and make our own mushroom soup. And it's super important to me because it reminds us of, you know, coming to America, being welcomed into this country, getting all these opportunities here. It's like a way, every year we celebrate it, and it's like a really big deal because it's a reminder that we're just like happy to be here.
Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely. So we've gotten messages from a lot of listeners for you. You ready to take them?
Let's do it.
Right on. Let's start with Natalie in Boston.
Hi, this is Natalie. Last year, I made a turkey for the first time, and it was great, but I really don't feel like I need to do that again. Do you have an untraditional idea for kind of a centerpiece dish? A vegan and non-vegan option would be great. I love Mexican, Thai, Vietnamese, really any type of food. Just looking for some new ideas. Thanks so much. Love your show.
Great.
Okay, Natalie. I really think Thanksgiving food can be whatever you want it to be. For vegetarian and vegan, I would recommend going Mexican over Thai or Vietnamese because it's a little hard to do Thai and Vietnamese vegetarian without the fish sauce. You're going to always be missing some funk. But there's a lot of Mexican dishes that are like totally vegetarian as they are, so you don't have to do anything. For like a really extravagant centerpiece, I think something like chilies en nogada would be awesome. It's like colorful and pretty. Or just chili rellenos. Chilies en nogada usually has meat, but you could do like crumbled tofu instead.
What are they?
It's like really vibrant. It's like green, white, and red to signify the colors of the Mexican flag.
Right on.
And it's usually stuffed with like a picadillo, which you can really easily make with crumbled tofu. And I feel like the texture is like spot on. And there's so much seasoning in there, you won't even miss the meat. And it has like a walnut cream sauce and like it's simmered in tomato that's blended with onion and garlic. And it's a difficult dish, but I feel like Thanksgiving is a day to slave over the stove.
What do you put in your picadillo?
Well, so if you're going to do it with tofu, first of all, I would recommend cutting the tofu like in half crosswise. So you have two 1-inch slabs and then press them. I think you should press them like overnight in a kitchen towel, really dry it out. And then I like to do it in a nonstick skillet, get it kind of hot with some oil, crumble it, and then just let it hang out for a while to get it nice and brown, and then start tossing, browning, and it'll get really crispy, really crusty, just like beef. And then I think a little bit of Mexican oregano would be nice, some like maybe ancho chili powder. But if you can't find that, you know, just go with regular oregano, regular cayenne, whatever you can find. I think the thing that really makes it is adding some raisins, and so separately in another pan, frizzle up some raisins in some fat and toast some nuts. It's traditionally walnuts, but you know, use whatever you've got and then fold that into the meat. It has lots of nice texture. Not the meat, the tofu meat. It's so it's so good at being meat, I keep forgetting. And that's like, that's your filling. And then you just, you blister some poblano peppers, put them in a bag so they can steam, and then peel off that charred exterior and stuff it with this filling. And yeah, for the sauce, it's really just blend some tomatoes, onion, garlic. If you really want to take it to the next level, like char those too. Cook that down, let it simmer for a while. I like a little pinch of MSG in there, but you know, if you're scared of MSG, leave it out. But yeah, and then you simmer the chili in there a little bit and add like a walnut cream sauce by just blending up walnuts. It gets really nice and creamy. It's pretty tasty. It's going to be worth the work, and I think it's a really nice centerpiece.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful too. Wait, the walnut cream sauce, you mean literally just take walnuts and throw them in a blender?
Yeah, nuts are awesome because if you blend them up, they just turn into cream. You know,
I didn't know.
I know that's how
peanut butter is made, but like,
yeah, cashews and walnuts especially are really good like dairy replacements.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. What else would you serve?
Rice, beans, tortillas, some avocado, and you're set.
Man, you're an LA girl.
Yeah.
I think that is an awesome idea for Thanksgiving.
I was gonna say chiles rellenos in my plan, and then I said chile en nogada. Chile en nogada has no tomato. Whoops, guys. I got them too.
Oh no, really?
I got them both mixed up. But yeah, no, we'll do a blend. Do a hybrid stuffed chili. Why the hell not?
It's Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving. All bets are off.
All bets are off, yeah.
Right. Well, happy Thanksgiving, Natalie. We hope you enjoy the day. And maybe you're going to make the chiles, or maybe you'll make them tomorrow, because I think Thanksgiving food is always better the next day anyway.
Totally.
All right, so let's go to Chicago.
Hi, this is Heather calling from Chicago. I have a pie question for you. So for many years, I've been trying to master the apple pie. Mm-hmm. But the bottom always comes out soggy.
Oy.
And I've tried pre-cooking my filling. I've tried blind baking. I've tried brushing egg white on the bottom as a moisture barrier. But no matter what I do, I cannot achieve a non-soggy pie crust bottom. Please help. Thanks.
No. This is a real emergency.
Yes. I've definitely been here, Heather. I feel your pain. I think a lot of pie recipes are lies, because this has happened to me so many times. So if you're making your pie right now and you've already like planned it, then the best thing to do is make sure you put it on a rimmed aluminum baking sheet on the bottom rack, and that'll kind of help the bottom crust get darker. But
so put the pie plate or put the pie tin onto another sheet tray and bake it there.
And bake it all the way at the bottom, like remove your racks in your oven and put it at the floor of the oven. And I found that like in a pinch that can help like brown up the crust. But the real reason why this is happening, why your pie bottom's getting soggy, is because there's not enough sugar in the filling.
Hmm.
So what the sugar does is sugar likes water. So the sugar like hooks up with the water and creates like a sugar solution that will prevent it from like, you know, mingling too much with your crust. And okay. I think that where a lot of pie recipes go wrong is they don't have enough sugar. So I figured this out after using Stella Parks's apple pie recipe on Serious Eats. It's the best apple pie recipe. Your crust will get so crisp, because what she does is she mixes the apples with sugar and lets them hang out overnight in a zip-top bag. You must do it exactly how she says. Put it in a bag. I've tried it in a bowl. It doesn't work as well, because then the sugar makes like better contact with the apples and creates this really thick syrup. So then when you bake it, it won't give you a soggy bottom.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
But I've also...
And the idea is like it just thickens, like it absorbs the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Into the syrup. And so it doesn't flow as quickly into the crust.
Yeah. And I've... Uh-oh. I've tried to make this a few times, and I was like, oh, I'm smarter than Stella, and I'm going to reduce the sugar by, like, one tablespoon. And it totally won't work. Like, you have to listen to Stella, and you have to make the recipe exactly as she says. Do not skimp on the sugar. It's dessert, you know? You're just going to have a slice, but it will make sure that you have the flakiest, crispiest bottom without par baking, with no egg whites. It's going to be awesome.
That is an amazing tip. I have to admit, I have not made that pie, although I am a huge fan of Stella's. We actually went to cooking school together.
What? Really?
A zillion years ago. Yeah,
that's
totally.
Cool.
And I remember she was awesome in cooking school. And then, like, years and years later, I'm like, there she is, the superstar that she was mm-hmm. always meant to be. It mm-hmm. was so exciting to see. But yeah, her recipes are always amazing. And it is weird, right? Because she'd be like, put it in a bag. It doesn't work in a bowl. And like, no, actually, she's right. You have to put it in a bag, not in a bowl. Like, how do you know this? How did you figure that out?
Yeah.
Some freaky genius.
I've like tried to mess with the recipe because I'm like, I don't feel like getting a Ziploc bag. You need to do it exactly how she said, and it'll be the best pie you've ever had.
Amazing. Let's go to Seattle.
Hi, I'm Sharon. I live north of Seattle. And this year, my husband and I won't be getting together with family because, well, 2020. But I'm a rebel, so I'm planning to make all our favorite Thanksgiving foods anyway. Who cares that there's only two of us? We'll have a turkey and everything else anyway. But what do you do with all the leftovers when you can't package them into containers to send them home with family? I'm picturing myself already overflowing with turkey and everything else. All the leftovers. Help! Can you give us some super creative ideas for using up all that leftover turkey and the other sides? Thanks.
Yeah, I'm totally with Sharon. I think it doesn't matter how many people are coming over. You got to make the whole spread. And I think the best part is having leftovers to play with over a few days. So, well, you know, I actually just developed some leftover recipes for the New York Times.
Well, hello.
So you can check those out. They're focused on stuffing. Stuffing is a really fun leftover to play with because you can, like, it's just bread that's mm-hmm. seasoned. So any place that you would use bread, you can use stuffing. So I like to squish it into a loaf pan and then cut it into cubes and toss it in a panzanella.
Oh, wait. So, like, rebake the stuffing?
No, just smush it. Smush it up.
Okay.
Get it real smushy. Pack it into a loaf pan real tight.
Okay.
Let it chill overnight. And then pop that out, cut it into cubes,
oh.
and then you can fry those cubes and then toss it in a salad. And you got a little stuffing panzanella.
Yes. Talk to me.
Another fun thing with stuffing is I like to make stuffing dumpling soup. You take that stuffing, you mush it up again. There's a lot of mushing and molding.
Mush it all together.
Mush it all together. Add some flour and eggs. Make a turkey soup with your carcass. So simmer your carcass with water for, like, I do it for an hour and a half in a pressure cooker, or like 4 hours on the stovetop, and then load up that broth with veggies, turkey, and then drop in these dumplings, just like you do for chicken and dumps.
Mm.
Let it simmer. It gets nice and fluffy, tender.
Beautiful.
Stuffing dumplings.
Very fun.
But I think, like, after maybe like 2 or 3 days, you don't want it to taste like Thanksgiving anymore.
Yeah, I think 3 days is probably the limit.
Yeah. So I feel like the best way to, like, really freshen up the leftovers and not make it feel like Thanksgiving is to add some, like, aggressive seasoning. Like, take your casserole and toss it in, like, a fish sauce vinaigrette.
Oh, right.
And add some fresh cilantro and sliced chilies and turn it into something else, like, almost like a blasphemous larb or something like that.
Oh, right on.
Eat it in a lettuce wrap. I also really like to make tamales. Mm. Tamales are super easy. If you just follow the recipe on, like, the Moseka bag, which is what I do, you just paddle some fat in a mixing bowl and then add your Moseka. And then you can even add, like, your turkey broth to that to make this tamale dough. And then I like to fill it with, like, different Thanksgiving leftovers. Like, you can do a little turkey and gravy in one, and then, like, a little green bean casserole in another, a little sweet potato in another, and then it's, like, a fun surprise.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're going to get. And they keep forever in the freezer. So you can steam them all, have them in the freezer, and then have your, like, surprise tamale later later that month.
Right on. But what are you going to do with all that turkey? Like, if it's like even a small turkey, like a 10-pound turkey for two people is...
Mm-hmm.
What's the Mark Twain thing? Eternity is two people and a ham? Like, eternity is two people and a turkey.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, turkey to me tastes so Thanksgiving specific. Like, I want to put some, you know, chipotle in there and turn it into tinga, or put like peanut sauce and toss it with noodles. Like, I really want to transform it with some aggressive flavors.
Okay.
Yeah. Put it in a shakshuka, huh?
Yeah.
Cook down some harissa, tomatoes. Go hard on the flavors. Change it up so you don't get bored.
Right on. All right, let's go to Maryland, Silver Spring.
Hi, Turkey Confidential. My name's Cecilia. I'm calling from Silver Spring, Maryland. And this Thanksgiving, I want to make some sort of like chocolate dessert, because each year we just make pumpkin pie and it's getting a little boring.
How could you be bored of pumpkin pie?
So I have cocoa powder and like basic baking ingredients. I don't have any chocolate chips. And I believe I also have some butter, so I was hoping you could give me some suggestions for a really tasty chocolatey dessert this Thanksgiving. Thank you so much.
All right, Sola, what you got?
Well, I mean, I feel like Thanksgiving isn't Thanksgiving without pie, so I would do a chocolate pudding pie.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
You can
more.
Make like a really simple cocoa crust. By just doing like a 3-2-1 cookie dough kind of situation. So it's like 3 parts flour, 2 parts butter, 1 part sugar. Substitute.
Can you remind me, because it has been a long time since I was in my baking classes, but that's parts by weight?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And
So, okay.
I don't know how to turn that into volume, but you can look it up. There's plenty of internet recipes. And hi, the dogs woke up. Sorry. So just make a simple, like, shortbread or cookie dough like that, and then just substitute some of the flour for cocoa. And you don't even have to, like, roll it out. Get it into nice big clumps, scatter it on a sheet tray, and then bake it until it's dry. And then you have, like, an easy chocolate cookie that you just made. And blitz that up in a food processor, or pound it up in a Ziploc bag with a rolling pin, and add a little bit more butter and sugar, and press that into your pie tin. Mm-hmm. And bake that for like 10 minutes, and then you got your cocoa crust, easy to go. And then make like a really simple chocolate pudding. So you whisk together cocoa, sugar, cornstarch in a little pot. Add some milk and heat that up. Temper in some eggs. Pour that into your crust. Easy peasy. If you want to get really fancy, I would top it with some whipped cream.
That's really fancy.
A lot of
wait, how long would you let it chill?
At least a couple hours, preferably overnight.
Okay, so day before.
Yeah. And in a lot of chocolate pudding pie recipes have chocolate in it, but if you don't have chocolate, and this has happened to me, if you don't have chocolate, I just like bump up the cocoa and butter a little bit and it'll be okay.
It'll still be delicious.
Yeah.
Well, Sola, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been so fun. I want to go have chocolate pudding pie and chili en nogada with chili relleno sauce. And
yeah,
chili everything else you've talked about.
Relleno.
Yeah. But thank you again. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving with your husband. I hope you enjoy your green bean casserole.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Sola El-Waili is a star of two new video series, Stump Sola and Off Script with Sola. You can find them on YouTube. Well, that is our show for today. Thank you so much for spending part of your holiday with us. This year, really more than any other, I am reminded of how much I love talking with you and how much of an honor it is for us to visit with you, even from the safe distance of your speakers. From all of us at Splendid Table, have a happy Thanksgiving. This year's Turkey Confidential is supported by Knowable. Designed for those hungry to keep learning through audio, Knowable is a new destination for smart audio courses taught by experts in their field. Best-selling food writer Mark Bittman teaches simple, pragmatic cooking and eating intended to change the way listeners think about food altogether. Listen at knowable.fyi. I'm Francis Lamb, and this has been Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.